Hello, this is Dee, reading the Vermilion County News for July 20th. We'll begin our reading today with the front page article entitled City Prioritizes Roadway Work by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. City officials put together a list of roadways to address with the 2020 Seal Coat Program, but City Engineer Sam Cole said these aren't the worst roads in the city. Cole said they're trying to make sure these roads don't get to that point, and they'll go back to the worst roads and decide how to tackle them. The Danville City Council Tuesday night will consider approving a $396,243 2020 seal coat contract with Daniel L. Rib Trucking Incorporated. Motor fuel tax funds will pay for the work. City officials said asphalt preparation work has been occurring on about 70 roadway sections. Alderman Rick Strebing asked about another section of Avenue C that is in bad shape and not on the city's 2020 list. So one of the things I think that you'll see that this is a little bit different about the strategy that we're taking right now is that a lot of the seal coat prep we've done this year has focused on roads that aren't the worst roads. And the reason is we're trying to save those roads from becoming the worst roads. We've prioritized those for the time being, Cole said. City officials rated the roads. Cole said their goal is to go back to the worst roads, evaluate each one individually, and determine what's the best path forward on each of those. If you get calls that say we're fixing roads and mine is way worse, they're probably right. We're just trying to make sure that we do the most good and have the dollars stretch as far as we can so that we can actually afford to reconstruct the ones that are actually bad rather than limp them along in a mediocre fashion for a long time, he told aldermen earlier this week. Also, the council will consider approving the reappointment of City Clerk Lisa Monson to the Fire Pension Board of Trustees with a term to expire in April of 2024, and the alderman will hear a presentation of a Crime Stoppers donation. In other business, the council will act on accepting right-of-way and easements for the Gilbert and Madison Street intersection improvements related to the Carl at the Riverfront project, accepting real property at 513 West Madison Street, and purchasing property at 513 Harmon Street for the William Street realignment project. There's a burnt structure on the Madison Street site and a garage will be torn down. The city is purchasing the Harmon property, an old barbershop, for $7,500 from Teresa Winters. Carl is paying $45,369 for the land acquisition for the traffic signal change from Gilbert and Harrison to Madison and Gilbert Streets. The council will also consider amending city code for stop signs at Country Club and Denville Drives, Madison and Porter, Madison and Alexander, Madison and Beard, and Madison at Harvey Streets. They will also consider a real estate option agreement for the sale of property at 821 North Vermilion Street. The city would have the option to buy the First Farmers Bank and Trust property, which is now reopening, for a dollar. They will also consider a $104,744 professional services agreement with RJN Group, Inc. for sanitary sewer flow monitoring and sanitary sewer system evaluations relating to surcharging and overflow events upstream of the Cohen Creek siphon and the Jackson and English intersection. Cole said there would be smoke testing and televising of the sewers to figure out the problems. The council will also consider rejecting bids received for 2020 pavement striping due to bids exceeding the allotted funds. Cole said this work, that's done mainly by hand, drove up the price by about three times the projected amount. He said typically pavement markings last about 2 to 3 years, and they are discussing whether they should use city employees again to do the work. They're also considering vacating an east-west alleyway near 216 South Gilbert Street and a portion of Public Square for petitioner K2 Enterprises, LLC. A car wash is planned to be added to the Quick Lube property. And finally, they're also authorizing the purchase of properties through the Vermilion County Trustee. The trustee acquired the properties due to delinquent property taxes. Minimum bids are $800 each, which the city would pay. Funding comes from $1,600 from the city's Infrastructure Development Fund and $8,000 from the Community Reinvestment Fund. The properties the city will purchase are 100 Ohio, 9 Indiana, 1113 Jackson, 715 Robinson, 207 West Seminary, 617 North Vermilion, 27 South Buchanan, and 108 Bremer for blight removals, 113 East Main Street for redevelopment, 300 East Williams for blight removal, redevelopment, and 614 West Williams and 424 Harmon for road realignment project. If you go, the Danville City Council meets at 6 p.m. Tuesday at the Robert E. Jones Municipal Building, 17 West Main Street. Our next front page article is entitled Heart of Downtown, Covington City Offices Get New Home by Mary Wyckoff, Covington, Indiana. A town rooted in rich history is moving toward the future with new buildings and projects. One of those improvements is a new 4,000 square foot municipal building, replacing the 2,700 square foot structure on 2nd Street. The brick and stone city building is located at 329 Washington, just across from the county courthouse and within walking distance of shops on the square. Mayor Brad Crane said he's heard only positive comments from people. It's more convenient to be downtown, he said. It's been a plus for the community and the employees. As a bonus, he said the city didn't have to borrow money or raise taxes to pay for it. Debbie Gurley, clerk treasurer, agreed, saying, "It's wonderful that we're in downtown in a new building and everything in it. It's nice to be here in the middle of town." The city offices, including the police department, had been housed in the 2nd Street building for 27 years. It has been sold to the Special Education Cooperative, owned by 7 school corporations. Construction on the new building began last August, and employees moved into it in February. The building then was closed to the public for 2 months due to the coronavirus pandemic. One change is that the new building has a room just for the city council. On one wall is a colorful painting of the school district's mascot, a Trojan warrior, by speed artist John Jansky, which he created during the street fair in June of 2018. The police department has a large room for its 6 officers and school resource officer with an area for training. There's also an interview room, which the old building didn't have. For the main part of the building, a local artist is working on a 3-by-6-foot mural featuring city sites, which will be installed on one wall. An open house will be held once the artwork is finished. Almost all the furnishings are new, having been purchased from Arnold Office Supply Company. Other features are a large storage area, a kitchen for the staff and police, and hardwood floors. The mayor has his own carpeted office. There are 2 restrooms on the outside of the building, facing 4th Street, which the public may use during festivals. That means the city won't have to rent portable toilets. The new building was erected on a corner lot, which had been vacant for about 20 years. Previously, Faust and Frey Hardware Store stood at that site. Mary Wyckoff, Commercial News Covington, Mayor Brad Crane, talks to Left Debbie Gurley, Clerk Treasurer, and Rhonda Bowling, 2nd Deputy Clerk Treasurer in the new city building. That's under a lovely photo of the inside of the new building. Our next article is entitled New Homes, Businesses Help City Grow by Mary Wyckoff, Covington, Indiana. The city of Covington may grow to 3,000 people in the next year or so, Mayor Brad Crane said. Population is about 2,700 now. We've got it going on, he said. Ground is expected to be broken in a couple of weeks on the new Fountain Springs Assisted Living Center on Pearl Street. It will be next to the new Bureau of Motor Vehicles, which opened about 2 weeks ago. Fountain Springs will have between 42 and 50 units and also a memory care unit. It's a great thing, Crane said, adding it's needed in the city, it will be wonderful. Residents won't have to leave the building if they don't want to, as their meals will be provided, and there will be amenities such as a movie theater. A couple of housing projects are going on as well. The Riverdale subdivision on Peach Lane, off 9th Street, is under construction, and so is the new addition on the north side of the Rivercrest Golf Club. Also, a McDonald's restaurant at Pearl and 3rd, just west of Casey's General Store, is expected to open in summer of 2021. This will be the 7th restaurant for Don and Deanna Witzel, owners and operators of the McDonald's restaurants in Vermilion County in Illinois, and the first in Indiana. Deanna Witzel said, with COVID-19, everything has been in limbo. The city has started work at the site, but actual construction of the restaurant won't start until after the first of the year, probably March. In the meantime, McDonald's is hiring now for managers. Apply online at signup.mchire.com. We have a wonderful training program and will take anyone with leadership skills and teach them everything they need to know, she said. Witzel added, Mayor Brad Crane and the city of Covington has been wonderful to us. We are so excited about our new restaurant. We'll be very involved in the Covington community as we are in Vermilion County. The restaurant will feature a double drive-through and the latest technology available for customers inside the lobby and dining areas. It's expected to bring 60 new jobs. Another newcomer is Max Fitness and Performance Center in the 500 block of 4th Street, which is expected to open in next week or so. Brandon Ricketts and Brad Short own the 7,500-square-foot building. The city pool is undergoing renovations while it's closed. Upgrades will be made to the bathhouse and concession stand. Crane has said the additions are a boost to the town. Our next article is entitled, Hoopston Discusses Remote Learning by Carol Hicks, Hoopston. The Hoopston School Board discussed plans for the coming school year at Thursday's meeting. The question is, will the Hoopston area schools open in the fall or remain with remote learning? We are doing everything to provide services to our kids, said Superintendent Robert Richardson, and keep our kids safe. The school surveyed the parent community, receiving 232 responses, with several questions concerning opening the school, staying with remote learning, child care or no child care, early dismissal, masks, and access to remote learning. 64% wanted in-person schooling rather than remote learning. 48% required child care services. 39% required no child care, and 13% had no child care at all. 98% of the community surveyed said they had access to remote learning. The board discussed using Wi-Fi hotspots for those children that did not have access to remote learning, costs, plans, and providers. This was tabled for further discussion. I have a feeling we're going to get pushed to remote learning, Richardson added. Busing students was also an issue. It would be difficult to social distance on a school bus, and more planning and discussion was needed to solve this issue, according to Richardson. At present, the plan is to start school in person for part of the week and remote learning for part of the week, more in person among the younger children with guidelines of temperature taking, wearing masks at school, temperature checks, and social distancing for all students. Richardson plans to share all the communications from the survey with the staff and get their feedback, work more on the plan to open the school, and roll it out to the parents. We are charged with how to educate our kids, Richardson said, adding there will be opportunities for those that want all remote learning to do so, but the school has to come up with a plan for grading and also continually plan for in-person learning. The school board and staff will meet next week to discuss the different plans amid the constantly changing guidelines. In other school board business, the board approved unanimously the resolution to sell unneeded materials housed in Honeywell School and the release of plans and specifications for bidding purposes for the demolition of Honeywell. All memorabilia must be out of the school by July 29th, according to Richardson. Anything left in the school, the bidder considers part of the demolition. Richardson added the school is in the process of discussing the playground equipment at Honeywell with the city of Hoopston. The board also approved the 2020-2021 school calendar. November 3rd was recently made an election holiday, which was added to the school calendar. Also approved was the requisition to Great Minds for Eureka math materials for $29,276 through Title I funds, and the requisition to Renaissance Learning for accelerated READ and STAR 360 licensing renewals for $29,198 through Title I funds. Also approved the salary increase of 2.5% for the second year of the superintendent's employment contract. That was approved unanimously. Also the first reading of the policy updates and five-year policy review as presented, the marching band summer activity plan following IDPH guidelines, the show choir auditions following IDPH guidelines, and waiving the first and second reading of the amended Hoopston area K-8 and high school handbooks were approved unanimously. Bids were accepted from Aunt Millie's Bakery for bread products for the school district, Cloverleaf Farms for milk and juice products, and Ileana FS for fuel for the district. The collective bargaining agreement with HEA was approved unanimously for the 2020-21 school year as presented, with some minor word changes. Learned Ameren is putting up 6 extra light poles with LED lighting around the baseball field. Sports physicals will be August 5th at Charlotte Ann Russell Medical Center. Phase 4 guidelines for sports requires no contact, conditioning only. Athletes must wear masks inside the building, but are not required outside. Learned fall sports have been canceled, but IHSA has discussed a condensed season beginning in January. A definite answer will be given to the school board by July 24th, said Richardson. Learned band camp is tentatively scheduled for August 3rd. Learned the new 64-foot flagpole will be up by August 1st. The $600 flag that will top the pole will be removed after every event at the school. The next Hoopston School Board meeting will be Thursday, August 20th at 6 p.m. at the high school library. We'll now turn to our obituaries. The first is Joyce Ann Wininger, 683 at Attica, passed away at the home of her son and daughter-in-law in Lafayette, Indiana, with family at her side on Thursday, July 16th, 2020 at 8 p.m. Friends gathered at the Mouse Funeral Home, Attica on Sunday, yesterday, July 19th at 2 p.m. and the memorial service was held at 4 p.m. with Pastor Danine Rodriguez officiating. Interment will follow at a later date in the Riverside Cemetery, Attica. Memorial contributions may be made to the Paws and Claws Animal Shelter. Charles David Sester, 83, of Danville, passed away at 5:50 a.m. in Arcadia Health in Danville, Illinois, on July 16, 2020. A celebration of life will be held on Wednesday, July 22, 2020, at 10 a.m. at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, 3940 North Vermilion Street. Full military rights will be accorded by Catlin American Legion Post 0776. Pastor Kenneth Young will officiate. Visitation will be held on Tuesday, July 21st, 2020, from 4 to 6 p.m. at the funeral home. Interment will be in Sunset Memorial Park. It is kindly requested those in attendance for visitation or services wear a mask and practice social distancing. Memorials may be made to the Ileana Veterans Affairs Activities Fund for Veterans. William Jean Clem, 82, of Danville, passed away at 8:58 p.m. on Wednesday, July 15, 2020, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A service to celebrate the life of William Clem was held at 2 p.m. Saturday, July 18, at Sunset Funeral Home in Danville. Pastor Kent Tibben officiated. Burial followed at Johnson Cemetery in Danville. There was a visitation that was held before the services. Face masks were required, and in lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Trinity Lutheran Church. Jane Ellen Jenkins, 68, of Danville, passed away at 5:06 p.m. Wednesday, July 15, 2020, at her home. Per her wishes, cremation rites will be accorded. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville has been entrusted with the arrangements. In Jane's memory, donations may be sent to Danville Public Library Foundation, 319 North Vermilion Street, Danville, Illinois, 61832, or CARA Animal Rescue, 609 North 5th Street, Tilton, Illinois, 61833. Charlotte A. Retz, 85, of Danville, passed away at 9:52 p.m. Sunday, July 12, 2020, at her home, surrounded by family. Private family services will be held, and Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville is assisting the family with arrangements. Pastor Keith Klossner will officiate. Burial will be with her late husband in Danville National Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials are requested to Carl Hospice. Betty S. Suley, 87, of Danville, went to be with Jesus at 12:50 p.m. on Thursday, July 16th. A service to celebrate the life of Betty S. Suley will be held at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, July 22nd, 2020, at First Baptist Church in Danville. Pastor Paul Rebert will officiate. Private burial will take place at Danville National Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, July 21st, also at First Baptist Church. Memorials to First Baptist Church are encouraged in lieu of flowers. Marita J. Nana Heil, 64, of Westville, passed away at 1:22 p.m. on Monday, July 12th, 2020, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Services for Marita J. Nana Heil will be held privately by her family. Cremation rites are being accorded by Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. And now we'll turn to an article about sports entitled "Illini Move Ahead with Fall Sports" by Chad Dare Champagne. College athletics this fall is not a sure thing, but the University of Illinois is moving forward with its plans. On Thursday, Illinois Athletics Director Josh Whitman, along with Chancellor Robert Jones and Associated Athletic Director for Sports Medicine, Randy Ballard, participated in a public video briefing to discuss how the Fighting Illini were progressing with the return to sports while dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. "I think every decision that has been made, starting with the conference-only model and some scheduling items that will be forthcoming, have been made with an eye toward putting us in the best possible position to have sports," Whitman said. "We're excited, and we think this is a positive step toward a return to sports this fall." While Whitman was very positive, he also indicated that every safety measure will be used. "If the circumstances dictate, we certainly won't hesitate to pull the car over, if you will," he said. "We are hoping we can keep the car driving down the road as long as possible, hopefully all the way through the end of the fall seasons. But this year is already guaranteed to be totally different for Illinois. The Fighting Illini football, volleyball, men's and women's cross-country teams, along with the women's soccer, will play only Big Ten opponents. While football, volleyball, and soccer have had Big Ten schedules in the past, this is something brand new for cross country," said Whitman, who indicated that he and the other Big Ten athletic directors are still working on finalizing the official schedules. "Once the schedules are in place, especially football," Whitman says that Illinois will proceed with its game day plans. According to the Restore Illinois guidelines of Governor J.B. Pritzker, outdoor venues like Memorial Stadium, 60,670, will be limited to 20% capacity, which would be 12,134. We're starting to get a good handle on what that game day experience will be for our fans, said Whitman, who showed an example of what the seating might look like. It showed two empty rows in between occupied rows, in which there would be parties of anywhere from 2 to 8 fans, with at least 2 empty seats in between groups. The limited number of fans is not the only part of the equation for game day. Tailgating before or after the games is strictly forbidden. Fans will be strongly encouraged to wear face coverings, along with maintaining 6 feet of social distance at all times in public areas. Whitman added that facilities will be cleaned more frequently, possibly require restrooms to shut down part of the time. Concessions will be more grab and go, and tickets will be mobile. We expect people to wear masks as they enter the stadium and as they move throughout the building, Whitman said. There will be ample signage throughout the stadium, in the concourses, and elsewhere, encouraging people to keep their space and maintain distance from one another. Whitman admits this will be a huge change, but he says Illinois is going to comply with the Restore Illinois guidelines. We're continuing to hope, and I think this is important for folks to hear, is that throughout the course of the fall there could be opportunities for some relaxing of these guidelines, but we have to earn it, he said. We have to prove to the world that we're responsible, and we can be a community that demonstrates that we can exist in a socially distanced environment, that we can attend these larger events and mitigate against the spread of the virus. I think we should all accept that as a challenge. While the rules and regulations for outdoor events will definitely limit things at Illinois, the situation for Illinois volleyball is even more strict, as no fans will be allowed inside of Huff Hall this season. Whitman indicated that about 165 athletes have returned to the campus for voluntary workouts, and he stated that any athlete can opt out of their individual sport and maintain their financial aid package. We will do what is best for each one of our athletes, he said. According to Whitman, Illinois protocols for testing are rigorous, with more than 1,000 nasal swab tests taken by athletes and staff. Illinois does not publicly release the results. Ballard stated that anyone who does test positive is immediately isolated, the staff is notified, and they begin contact tracing. Our staff is checking on those in quarantine on a daily basis, said Ballard, noting that mental health is just as important as physical health. And here's an article from the Community News entitled Workplace Harassment, Danville. Danville Area Community College's corporate education is offering understanding and preventing workplace sexual harassment for managers, non-management, and licensed healthcare providers on August 12th. The sessions will be held at the Dak Bremer Conference Center for $29 per person. Effective January 1st, 2020, all Illinois employers are required to provide sexual harassment prevention training to all employees. After attending this session, you will be better able to explain sexual harassment consistent with the Illinois Human Rights Act, recognize examples of conduct that may constitute unlawful sexual harassment, assess and be aware of federal and state laws concerning sexual harassment, including remedies available to victims, and summarize various employer responsibilities regarding sexual harassment with a special focus on prevention.